a quiet end to a very eventful four-year term for Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen. The Fed's latest two-day policy meeting, Yellen's last, wrapped up Wednesday without a splashy press conference or surprise interest rate hike. But as the Fed's first female leader passes the reins to her successor, Yellen leaves a formidable footprint. Yellen effectively wound down a vast post-recession bond buying program and steered a slow rise in interest rates, all without derailing the economy as many feared.
Mark Zuckerberg has been doing a lot of soul searching lately. Amid reports of fake news and studies linking time online with depression, the Facebook CEO said he wanted to make sure his platform, quote, isn't just fun to use, but also good for people's well-being and society. And towards that end, the company has made a string of changes in the Facebook feed, such as showing fewer viral videos that's resulted in less time spent on the platform, 50 million hours less every day.
This is where tequila comes from. But thirsty patrons in cities like New York and Tokyo are drinking so much tequila that Mexico's $2 billion industry could be facing a crisis. In the western state of Jalisco, the tequila heartland, an agave shortage caused by this increasing demand has producers worried. The agave plant takes 7 to 8 years to mature, but farmers are now harvesting plants far younger than they should be. The question posed by many tequila makers now is how to keep up with its global success.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday, and it's February 1st, 2018, 5:10 in the morning. Glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell. Another business day, another business month opening up, and we have a good show for you this morning. Today on the broadcast, it's Thought Leader Thursday. Don Lloyd will join us momentarily. We'll talk a little bit about the strength of the dollar. And a little bit later in the program, student entrepreneurs. We're going to be talking about a contest that has them all vying against each other. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening losses on Wall Street. Dow futures are down 46 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are mixed. Looking around the rest of the globe, in London, the stock market is up just a fraction. In Germany and France, stocks are higher as well this morning. And in Asia, markets are generally mixed, with the Nikkei up more than a percent, almost a percent and a half, 387 points. And futures, oil futures are showing $65.31 a barrel, up 57 cents. A couple of stories we're watching for you this morning. Sears Holdings says it's laying off 220 workers, primarily at its headquarters in Hoffman Estates, as it struggles to turn around its ailing business. Company spokesman says the job cuts are across the board and are effective immediately. Sears says it's offering severance and transition assistance to those workers who are eligible. Also this morning, you heard in the opening montage, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg says fixing Facebook is his personal challenge this year. The company has already announced several changes to that end. For example, it's showing users more posts from friends, family, instead of businesses and publishers. But it's far from clear whether those tweaks will produce lasting change or if they are merely cosmetic in nature. And a $1.5 trillion infrastructure plan by President Trump could place greater pressure on state and local governments to come up with more of their own money for big projects. The president said during the State of the Union address that every federal dollar in his plan should be leveraged by private investors or state and local governments. It's Thought Leader Thursday. Don Lloyd is here from Associated Bank. He's the Senior Vice President and Manager of Capital Markets, where he oversees the foreign exchange, rate swaps, and commodity derivatives. Lots to talk about this morning. Don, good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Steve, good morning. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. Yeah. We begin this morning with still some wrap-up from the World Economic Forum in Davos. I saw this hubbub about the dollar, and I immediately thought of you, because I remember what you've always said about a strong dollar versus a weak dollar. So what did you think of the Treasury Secretary saying a weak dollar might be good for the country?
You're not supposed to remember what I've said in the past. I mean, you sort of feel like my boss and holding me accountable for things. The World Economic Forum, you know, where all these leaders get together, and, you know, whether they're financial leaders, captains of industry, entertainers, academia, to me, you know, everything that's said there, it's sort of like open mic night. You know, it's a time where people can sort of get up, say what they want under the guise of let's make a better world and let's communicate. And communication is great. But what comes out of it isn't exactly policy. It's sort of wish list best ideas on how we can cooperate together. And, you know, you're going to get, in my opinion, you're going to get some discord and some cross communication that goes on, dollar up, dollar down. Just understand that these are all, these aren't policies. These aren't official policies that come out. These are more political type positions and what's in the best interest of our country. Not just our country, but the country of the people that are speaking. And let's bring some hot topics to bubble up. And it's the whole panacea of what you can talk about out there. So you're going to get cross communication. You're going to get dollar up, dollar down. And, you know, what's in the best interest of the United States and our isolationism and, you know, U.S. first and sort of this whole era of what's going on out there. Strong dollar, weak dollar. So you're in a situation now where you've got the dollar coming off. You got a little bit of a weak dollar situation going on. And you've got some people that are out there saying weak dollar's good, strong dollar's good. Depends on what side of the fence you're on. If you're an importer, you love strong dollars. If you're an exporter, you love the weak dollar.
Well, give us a little economics lesson here. I mean, because we have seen a strong dollar over recent years. And our economy seems to be doing well with that.
Sure. To me, what moves the dollar mostly are investment and interest rate differentials between countries. I've always said that. I'm still a big believer of that. Right now, what you have going on is a little bit of a bubble where you've got oil prices that have pushed up to $60, $70 a barrel. When you have commodity prices that are based in U.S. dollars like oil and gold, when they go up, you've got the dollar that's coming down. That tends to be the natural course of things. And that's really, I think, what's happening here is that you sit there and look at interest rate differentials and you have U.S. interest rates that have sort of pushed up a bit. That created this big inflow, a demand for U.S. dollars in the globe. And now you've got foreign countries' interest rate curves starting to push up as well. And that differential is narrowing between the U.S. and these foreign. So now you've got this flow of commodity prices up, interest rate differentials narrowing, the dollar's coming off a little bit. And that's fine. You know, the things don't move in one direction forever. They sort of jag and jig all the way up and down. You know, I still think you're in a long-term dollar bull scenario. But at this stage of the game, you know, especially because of world demand creating oil prices and pushing them higher, you're still getting a little bit of a correction in the dollar. How long does that last? I don't know. It could last 6 months, could last 3 months, could last a year. Who knows how long it lasts? Don't really care. You know, take a look at the longer type view. You know, the euro has moved from $1.60 to $1.40 down to $1.10. We're correcting up to $1.25 or so right now. Maybe you touch $1.30, $1.28. We'll see what happens after that. Because I still think the U.S. is leading the world. I still think U.S. interest rates are going to go up. The U.S. Interest rate curve is going to steepen. And I think all of that is going to attract funds back into the U.S. So
can't this do a little bit of damage, though, in the short term? I know 6 months may not seem like a long time, but let's say to farmers, to the agriculture community, you see that dollar go down.
Sure.
They're going to start panicking a little.
Sure. Could do it. On the other hand, prices start moving again. It's going to give them opportunities to hedge. And that's exactly what you're seeing, for instance, in oil and natural gas. You have all of these hedgers now that, you know, were sort of not excited about hedging in the high 40s or the 50s. And now in the mid 60s, they're coming out of the woodwork. I mean, I can't tell you our commodity desk, what we're pricing has probably tripled in what we're pricing and the interest that producers are coming in saying, I'm looking to hedge calendar year 2018, calendar year 2019, Cal's 20. You know, they're interested in hedging. What's the price? And, you know, some are pulling the trigger and some are, you know, getting really, really warm to pull the trigger. So that's what's going on. You know, and to me, I've never really thought about it. You know, prices up, prices down, strong dollar, weak dollar. It's the movement. It's the change. And that's what drives my business. And whether that change is for, you know, up or down, it doesn't really matter. The fact is there's that volatility or that change that's there. That's what attracts the hedgers to come in and do something.
So if you were to draw us a chart and it was, let's say, over the long term, it would be a steady up graph?
In the U.S. dollar?
On the U.S. dollar? Or
yeah, I mean, certainly a steady up over the last 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. It's been that way. And this isn't even a major correction.
Yeah.
This is a little bit of a correction that's been going on for the last 6 months or so, 9 months maybe. You get up around 135, 140s, 145s. Okay, now you're talking a major correction at that point in time. You know, we've bounced from 110 or a touch below up to the 125 level. Okay, good correction. It's been under control. It hasn't been out of control. It's been very orderly markets. Good. Now let's see where we go. All I know is you've got 10-year Treasury sitting at a 270. Yeah. You know, this is the highest yield we've seen in quite a while, and you've got the yield curve starting to steepen now, which is good. It's healthy. You know, it's what the U.S. wants. It's basically an indication that the economy is good. There's a little bit of inflation being brought back in. Real rates of return are starting to get where they need to be. That's all good news for the U.S. That's only going to attract investments. It's going to attract capital. And now you've got President Trump out there, you know, in the World Economic Forum saying, we're open for business, you know, bring your companies in here. Right. Not necessarily your poor, tired, and weak, but certainly your businesses and companies come on in.
So what does that open the door for when he says we're open for business?
Companies to come back, you know, to sit there and say, let's put up camp here in the U.S. Let's create our businesses here in the U.S. Instead of the United States being an importer of goods, let's manufacture them right here. Let's put people to work here in the United States. You know, you've sort of got that tax situation sort of working his way. You know, you've certainly got him, you know, soliciting businesses to come in here, and you've got a U.S. economy that's sort of leading the world, into growth. Not bad things. You know, like I said, the world is very good and businesses are very good at rationalizing risk and return. And if they're going to look at places to set up camp, they're looking out 5 years, 10 years down the road. You know, is this something sustainable in the U.S.? You know, they're not going to flip in here for, you know, 2 or 3 year move. You know, you're not moving companies that fast for that. But, you know, for the next 10 years, sure, why not?
I know a couple of people that have went out and bought a washer, a new washer and dryer after the tariff decision. What is the danger here that we could fall into a trade war with some countries?
Well, you're starting to see it already. In certain solar panels, for example, the tariffs that are imposed on imported solar panels from China. You know, I mean, you're starting to see little bubbles of that in pockets. You know, is that going to continue? Certainly falls into Trump's whole idea of America has been sort of taken advantage of over the decades, and we're going to fight that now. You know, it's a message that's being sent out there. I'm never one for tariffs. I'm one for free trade. That is going to hurt in the long run. You know, certainly it's a growl to get somebody's attention, but you know, if it gets out of hand, I think that's going to hurt the U.S. economy in the long run. You know, I'm all for open borders. I'm all for free trade. So anytime you see tariffs, even on solar panels from China, because the Chinese have been currency manipulators and it's unfair trade practices. Okay, you know, I get it. I don't think tariffs are the way to go. I mean, to me, I like the free markets to be free and for America to do what it does best, which is innovate. And you see that, again, going back to the whole oil thing. You know, what have you seen? You saw OPEC producing, and, you know, they said they were going to cut their production, but they really didn't, flooded the market with all this oil and prices went down. You know, prices went, you know, $30 a barrel. And the whole idea was to put this whole shale business and fracking out of business. And it didn't. Knocked some companies out. But what happened is that it created the companies that remain to become more efficient, more productive in pulling oil out. And they survived. Oil has come back up because of the world demand as the economy grows. And we're pulling oil out of the ground now. I mean, we've just surpassed Saudi Arabian oil production at 10 million barrels a day. And we're closing in on Russia, which is producing about 12 million barrels a day. You know, not bad. You know, and to me, that is without government intervention. It's without tariffs. It is the market doing what it does best, which is innovate and create. And here's a barrier, $30 barrel oil. Some companies are going to go away. But the ones that are fast, the ones that are smart, the ones that can innovate and change and become more efficient are going to be stronger and more productive. And we're seeing that. Let unleash that in every industry we have, not tariffs.
Yeah. $70 a barrel oil, though, I remember the last time we were at that level, and it's not really good for consumers, is it?
Hasn't really bled through too much to the pump yet, and really you haven't seen it in the pricing of goods yet that are oil-based. There's still a lot of production out. When you take a look at the oil rigs that have been opened up, and remember, as oil fell, these rigs were capped off and closed down. And we went to maybe under 300 oil rigs that were opened up in 2016. That was the lowest point. Well, we're back up to like 750 rigs have been opened up, 400 alone, you know, in the past year. Oil price is going up, and that's what I mean about the efficiencies. It is pretty easy for companies now to cap off rigs and open them right back up again if they have to. That's what I mean about the efficiencies. It's not a high cost to do that anymore. So as oil comes up, more of these rigs are getting opened up. We're pulling more oil out, and supply is going to go. Right now, the demand and the world demand that you see from this economic growth going on is surpassing or certainly keeping up with the production of them pulling out. It's a nice balance, and it's a nice equilibrium right now. We've seen a little bit of prices go up at the pump. But, you know, we're not talking $3.50, $4 a gallon like we had seen before. You know, there's just too much supply that's still out there. It's a nice equilibrium right now, especially in a growing market.
The danger is what, though, if we continue down this road?
I don't really see any danger. Okay. You know, do I think you're going to get back to $85, $70, $85, $100 a barrel oil? No, I don't think you're going to see that. There's just we're too efficient at pulling oil out of the ground now. I mean, this whole fracking thing just opened up reserves that we've never seen before, certainly not 10, 15 years ago. And, you know, there's a lot of oil to go through before you're going to see $100 barrel oil. I mean, you're just not going to see that. Not in our lifetime, I don't think.
The last time we talked, we mentioned cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin, yep. All of those. We're seeing a lot more wariness, aren't we?
Yeah, well, the genie's out of the bottle now. It's on everybody's radar screen. And by everybody, I mean the professionals that are out there. And there's one thing about the professional market. They're very, very good at assessing risk and looking for opportunities. And, you know, you've got regulators and you've got country politicians now that are sitting there for whatever concern they have, whether it is the unregulated market of cryptocurrencies, whether it is the avenue of money laundering and all these, you know, bad things that are out there. But at the end of the day, you know, the professionals in this market and the financial market, which are very good at making a dollar, you know, they're taking a real good look at this.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Wild West is sort of ending as when it comes to cryptocurrencies. Personally, I think a year from now, 2 years from now, maybe, you're going to look back at cryptocurrencies and say, oh yeah, remember that. It's a fad that I think has just sort of blown up. And now it's going to go away the way of the pet rock and the cabbage
or
patch
the tulip
dollar.
Bulb, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
And the funny thing is, that's, you know, it it's a joke sort of when you see a KFC in Canada. They have the crypto. Do you see this? They have the Bitcoin bucket, I think is what
right.
It was called. You could use your Bitcoin to buy a bucket of fried chicken.
The world's changing. I mean, here I am at my age. I walk into companies now and there's signs up saying, we do not take cash anymore, you know, and that is a huge, you know, gear shift for guys like me, you know, where cash is king. And I mean, what do I keep in my wallet now other than pictures of my wife and my kids? I mean, to walk in, not just one store, but store after store after store now has signs that are up saying we're cashless. We no longer take cash, which is fine if you're a millennial or, you know, a young person out there that's used to it. You know, with me, that's a big step for somebody like me.
And it's getting to the point now, too, where it's not just even a piece of plastic. It's waving your phone in front of the...
Right. So 10 years from... 5 years from now, you know, it's exciting. You know, and that, to me, is what cryptocurrency is all about. This was a flash in the pan, but what's going to come after it? And, again, unleash that creativity. You know, what's going to come after it is something similar, but something better, something more stable, something more robust, something that is possibly true electronic money. Because what you're dealing with cryptocurrency, it's not money. It's not stable enough to be considered legal tender. You know, you might want it to be, but it's still not stable enough, and it's not regulated enough, which was the whole attraction of it. What's going to be the next generation? What's going to be the third or fourth generation of this thing down the road? And, you know, this was the birth of it, and we saw it. That's exciting. That whole front row seats to change and innovation in a newly created currency and industry, if you want to look at it that way. That's exciting.
Nice chatting, yeah. Don. Always good to see you. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, Steve.
Don Lloyd is the Senior Vice President and Manager of Capital Markets at Associated Bank. It's our thought leader conversation. Happens every Thursday here on The Opening Bell. You can learn more, by the way, about the thought leaders from Associated Bank at associatedbank.com/thought leadership. And you can also hit our website, too, to listen to past conversations, wgnradio.com. We'll upload the podcast of today's show, including an After the Bell conversation with Don, a little bit later on this morning.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. As PacBack continues its pivot away from an online textbook platform and into an artificial intelligence software for college courses, Mark Cuban and other investors are pouring more money into the Chicago startup. PacBack said it has raised $4.2 million in a round of funding, which included money from the famed Shark Tank investor. ShiftGig moved into new digs this week and announced plans to add 100 new jobs to a Chicago team. ShiftGig, a startup that's built an on-demand staffing platform to connect hourly workers to open shifts, moved into the third floor at 1 North State Street. And Amazon has reportedly required all 20 cities on its shortlist for HQ2 to sign a non-disclosure agreement, barring them from releasing details to the public about the search process. So don't expect too many details before Amazon makes its decision later this year. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Thursday edition of The Opening Bell. More than 800 students from Illinois and Michigan-based schools will showcase virtual companies that they've created and operated year-round in their classrooms. It's the Virtual Enterprises International Regional Conference and Exhibition, Friday, February 2nd, which is tomorrow. We're happy to have with us today Nick Chapman. He's the president of Virtual Enterprises International. Nick, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Well, tell us about this. How do these students do this? What's the goal? It sounds like a bunch of smart kids.
It's a lot of kids all over the place. And what they're doing is they're creating businesses in classrooms as part of their school day. So this is a class just like you would have English, science, or math. The students are tasked with creating a business. They take on roles in the company from CEO to CFO, sales and marketing, human resources, what have you. Over the course of the year, they write a business plan. They pitch that plan to investors, and then they set up trade shows like this that we're going to see on Friday.
And so what kinds of companies are they creating?
They are creating anything that you can imagine, anything you can see in the real world. We've got firms that are addressing the insurance needs of the other companies in the marketplace. We have online grocery delivery, a lot of folks popping up in the tech sector and different types of drone businesses or 3D printing, anything you can imagine. These kids are really percolating with some great ideas.
This is a challenge that I'm guessing is one that is not only difficult but competitive. I've been reading reports from other parts of the country where students have been doing this. The Illinois, Michigan kids have some stiff competition.
They do. They do. They're part of a network of 450 schools around the country, and they're all vying for spots in our national competition, which takes place in April in New York City, where we bring about 4,000 kids from around the world together for 3 days of events and competitions and all sorts of things. So, these kids are really gunning for it today.
When I was in school, the business class consisted of learning how to use an adding machine and, at the end of my high school career, computers. This seems like that on steroids. What is the hope here that these young kids will become the entrepreneurs of tomorrow?
It is that also, and it's also about preparing them for meaningful careers. So whether they are or are not going to become entrepreneurs, we're trying to give them the understanding of the business world, what it looks like, what the types of careers that are available to them. So, you know, thinking about the collaboration and teamwork that comes out of creating a business together, the critical thinking and problem solving, the communication skills, written, verbal, and digital skills in these days, The leadership that students take by running teams and learning how to manage each other, those are the types of things that you're not going to get in textbook, and those are the types of things that matter most out in the real world. So we're trying to do our best to prepare our kids for jobs and careers that may not even exist yet.
The curriculum here, how does this get implemented into a school? Or I'm guessing you select various schools based on their business acumen or close to business acumen, places that are located in business areas?
Sure. No, I mean, we're an open program to all schools. We're a national nonprofit, so we offer curriculum and support materials, access to our network, and all of that. We train teachers on the methodology, and really anyone that wants to, any principal school leader that's looking to prepare their students for careers, is welcome to join the program, and we support them, and it's a class, part of their school day. So the interesting thing is that kids are getting credit for this, you know, just like they would for science or mathematics.
It's very interesting, very cool to think that these kids are living sort of real life. And when I say this, it's these courses, this is real. I mean, they're playing with sort of not real money, but they have sort of a virtual money that they're using. They maintain 401ks. They're doing everything that a business does, aren't they?
They are. They're doing everything that you would imagine that you would do every day in your job. In your career, these kids are doing it here. So the only thing that aren't real is there's no actual money changing hands. It's a simulated currency all done online. And there's no physical products changing hands. So the kids are simulating the products and the product development process and all of that. But everything else that they're getting is real. It's tangible. You feel it. I've got the New York City finance firms that are investing everyone's money in their 401ks. You've got, you know, I've got the insurance firms from around the country. I've got, you know, everything you can imagine. So the students have their own bank accounts. So they're learning how, and they get a salary from their company. So they're learning how to manage their own budget. So from a personal finance perspective, it's not just about them learning how to make a budget. It's about them implementing that budget. I have to find a place to live. I have to find transportation. I've got some discretionary spending for entertainment, what have you. So really putting all the pieces together for these young people.
What do you hear from kids about this experience when they're going through it and when they're done with it?
The biggest thing that I hear about it is the ownership that students are able to take. So oftentimes, this is the first chance that they've had in their educational career to really drive the car. They're making the decisions on what their business is, what they get to do, how they set up their company. Really, you know, they're given the freedom to fail and the opportunity to succeed, and they really rise to that. And I find that ownership and that leadership that they take is really the most compelling aspect, the outcome of the program for me.
One of the positives of this, too, that I think you probably want to toot the horn about is the high percentage of the kids that are involved in this that find their future career paths going through this simulation.
That's absolutely right. You know, I talk to a lot of kids that have been through the program, and they're still in careers that they started in VE. Over 75% of all VE students, according to our alumni surveys, stay in the career path that they decide in high school in their virtual enterprise class. So it's really compelling in that way. And, you know, when you're thinking about something like human resources or information technology and trying to understand what that means as a 16 or 17-year-old, seeing it in person and doing the job every day will tell you a little bit about something about that career and whether it's something you like and or something you want to pursue or something that you want to stay away from.
Yeah, I would imagine. So what are the lesson plans like, aside from actually doing going through the virtual day of a business? Do they get to hear from speakers, and are they interacting with the real business community?
Absolutely. So at all of these events, we have our business partners that come to judge and to critique and to give feedback to the students. Most all the schools have mentors from their local communities that come in and help them in different functional areas, be it marketing or design or accounting and finance, what have you. We take an organization like Deloitte, who's been a partner of ours for many years. They're putting mentors in the classrooms every week, and they're using this as a talent pipeline initiative. They're helping to recruit young people, bring them in through their college careers, and then ultimately have them start their careers at Deloitte. So, you know, for the corporations, for HSBC, who is a huge partner of ours, this is a great opportunity to get these kids ready and develop your workforce and your talent pipeline.
Nick, you mentioned that these kids will go on to a national championship. What are the prizes involved here?
Well, a lot of college scholarships. You'll find that the colleges and universities are really interested in these young people, and they're recruiting them right from our event. So that's part of it. Also, as part of our our annual fundraising gala, we do a venture challenge. So we like to say moving from simulation to startup. So when the young people have great ideas that are outside of their class, they have a pathway to explore that. Last year, we offered $10,000 and a year's membership at with WeWork to help them cultivate their idea.
And that's great. So some of these ideas live on and actually become real businesses.
Oh, that's right. And some of them live in the school and stay in the school. Some of them expand beyond the school. Some of them are just a springboard to a great idea and to you know, a successful career in entrepreneurship.
How can people learn more about this? And can the public attend this conference?
Absolutely. So if you come on down to the Stevens Convention Center in Rosemont on Friday morning, we'll be there from 9 to 1 p.m. We'll give you a fake credit card. You come down there and shop till you drop if you'd like. And if you want to learn more about the program, we're available online, veinternational.org. Like I mentioned, national nonprofit. We're open to all high schools. And we've also recently begun a middle school program, which is starting to explore career opportunities and exposing students in the middle grades to the types of career opportunities and entrepreneurship opportunities that are out there.
Nick, very exciting. It kind of makes me want to go back to high school. This is a great idea, and we wish all the best to you and the students involved.
Steve, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be with you this morning.
Nick Chapman, the president of Virtual Enterprises International. Again, that website you can head to is veinternational.org. With all the information about this. Again, the conference, the exhibition is tomorrow, February 2nd, at the Donald E. Stevens Convention Center in Rosemont.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures off 32 points this morning. NASDAQ and S&P futures are flat to negative. Now the latest on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Live cattle futures fell yesterday for a second straight session. Softer cash cattle prices and some technical selling. Commodity funds are holding sizable net long positions in live cattle and feeder cattle futures. February cattle futures finished higher, up 97 cents, but most active April settled lower, down $1.25. And after the close, the U.S. Department of Agriculture reported the cattle herd at 94.4 million head as of January 1st, up 1% from a year ago. Lean hog contracts ended mixed. February lean hogs went up 77 cents, and the most active April hogs fell 65 cents. Looking at grain trade yesterday, South American weather back in the picture because we saw profit-taking dragging U.S. wheat from multi-month peaks. Chicago Board of Trade March soft red winter wheat fell 5.5 cents. And other grains yesterday, corn and soybean traders monitoring weather in Argentina. Drought has reduced plantings and hurt yield potential for both of those crops in South America. And word from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency yesterday, the 2015 Waters of the United States rule will not be applicable for 2 years while EPA works to repeal and replace the Obama-era Clean Water Regulation. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. We have a couple more stories for you this morning. Toyota is recalling about 645,000 vehicles worldwide to fix an electrical problem that could stop airbags from inflating during a crash. The recall covers the certain Toyota Prius and Lexus RX and NX SUVs. Also covered are some Toyota Alpard, Velfire, Sienta, Nova, Voxy, Esquire, Succeed, Corolla, Highlander, and Hilux models, all produced from May of 2015 and March to March of 2016. The automaker says an open electrical circuit could occur over time, and that would set off an airbag warning light and could stop the side and front airbags from deploying. Mario is getting together with the Minions. Japanese video game company Nintendo says a movie starring the plumber in the Super Mario franchise is in the works, being co-published with the chief executive of Illumination Entertainment. That's the U.S. animation studio behind the popular Despicable Me series. Nintendo's star game designer Shigeru Miyamoto told reporters that the script is mostly finished and is promising a fun movie. The movie, 2 years in the making after a meeting between both organizations set for global universal, global distribution through Universal. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for this Thursday, February 1st. There are two major government economic reports due out today. The Labor Department issues revised data on fourth quarter productivity, and the Commerce Department reports on U.S. construction spending in December. Other economic reports coming out today include the manufacturing index for January from the Institute for Supply Management. That's a trade group of purchasing managers. And also we'll see this week's average U.S. mortgage rates from Ford, from Freddie Mac. Automakers release vehicle sales for January, and the quarterly earnings reports continue to come today, including United Parcel Service, Alphabet, Amazon, Visa, and Apple. Some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday, February 1st.